Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show from the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white, drink blue and light. And don't forget to try the new Labatt Blue Light Seltzer Variety Pack, available at retailers throughout Pennsylvania.
And welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with Dustin Hawkinsmith. Dustin, welcome in. Great to talk to you again, as always.
It's good to be here. I had a competitive cheer weekend, and it's just good to get back to something I understand, Jim.
Well, how did you perform at the competitive cheer event, Dustin?
I did pretty well. I was out of breath after 4 seconds, but that's a new record for me. So it's all about incremental progress. 1% better each day. Next week, I'll be able to go 5 seconds, and I'll be on my way.
Well, hopefully your daughter did better than you did, Dusty. All right, let's get to some Penn State news. My highlight of the week was that we covered it last week that Noah Cain had entered the portal. Day later, lo and behold, he has a new home, and it's LSU. Any part of that story that surprises you, Dusty, say going to LSU, his home area, anything about it stick out?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to say that I'm sure LSU called Brian Kelly and said, "It's a great day to be a Tiger. Me and my family are excited to be here." I just wanted to do the Brian Kelly fake Southern accent, but it's the speed with which it unfolded surprised me, but it probably shouldn't have surprised me. You know, I think any illusion here that this is an innocent zone, the transfer portal is a fully innocent player-driven zone, probably should be disregarded. You know, we are in many ways, and I don't have a huge gripe with it, you know, not as big as a lot of people do, but just that this is a professional situation now. And there was I have a hard time believing there wasn't some kind of understanding when Noah Cain announced his decision to leave Penn State that there would be a spot available for him at LSU. Now, he might have been in the portal for a certain amount of time before he made that announcement. There might have been, you know, legal conversation. I don't really know all the ins and outs of that, obviously, because it happens behind the scenes. But you're going to see more of this. You know, by the time a kid announces he's going to transfer, his destination's already going to be picked out. And this is just where we are. I mean, this is the free agency element. And whenever you open the door to player empowerment, which, again, I'm in favor of that, you're just going to have these kind of messy situations along the way. And, you know, Noah Cain didn't make that announcement and say, "I can't wait to consider my options." His option was already considered, and it was going to be LSU. He's from Baton Rouge. He's from the South. It makes sense for him to graduate this spring and still have 2 years of eligibility left to do it at a school that's close to home, to do it in the SEC, and get a chance to really kind of end his career with an exclamation point. I'm in favor of all that, but it did surprise me a bit that the turnaround time was rapid.
Another element to this, Dusty, and I didn't think of it on my own. This was Ross who brought this up in our show last week, is that players, the timing of them entering the portal sometimes is not a coincidence. As you mentioned, Noah Cain is going to graduate from Penn State this semester. In order to have his scholarship paid for this semester, he needed to wait for this semester to begin before announcing it. So he's already got his spring semester paid for. Now, I don't blame Noah Cain for doing it that way. That's the smart thing to do. But I think we as fans should understand that that's how it works. So, and the LSU connection, who knows how long ago that was made, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, maybe a month ago, that was all done. And I don't blame the players for any of that, Dustin, but we should all be aware that's what's happening.
Correct. And it's fun. I mean, so the timing of it, he gets a scholarship paid for. And if you view scholarship as an even transaction in exchange for football activities, he's getting the scholarship, and I don't really think he's not doing any football activities to further the Penn State program while he's on campus through the winter, through the spring. So he's just finishing things off. And, you know, I think this is just, you know, one of many situations going into the future, including, you know, we were talking off air, bowl opt-outs and stuff like that, where coaches just kind of have to grin and bear it. What else are you supposed to do? I mean, players have more control over what they can and want to do now. And this is just part of the game. And I'm sure James Franklin is like, you know what? I mean, we're paying for this kid's scholarship for another semester. He's not coming in and mentoring the young guys or showing. To his credit, if he's doing that stuff, that is awesome. But that would not be my expectation. He's finishing school and he's getting ready for the next step, which, again, like, you or I would probably do the same thing, but it is just part of the system. And when we talk about salty Jim, you know, it's the system and the overhaul that's happening and in all of college football and all these different areas.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned salty Jim, because we have several topics today where Jim is going to get a little salty. So let's move on. Interesting news from the NFL. Micah Parsons, rookie. He made first team all pro, having a fantastic rookie season, isn't he?
Just brilliant through and through his play on the field. And, it dawned on me this week that you and I have never, it might have come up on other shows, but we've never really discussed Micah Parsons and what he's doing and the chess piece that he is. And just the salty Jim alert, the chess piece he would have been in 2020 in Penn State's defense, what he was positioned to do. You know, just I had heard reports that Brent Pry was planning on pretty much doing exactly this with Micah Parsons back in 2020 before he opted out.
And you alluded to salty Jim, so I will give you the salty Jim take on this. Huge fan of Micah Parsons. Love what he does. Hate that he's doing it for the Cowboys, but that aside, what a great player. What a unique athlete, unique player, very special. But I think if we're going to tell the whole story of Micah Parsons, let's not leave out the part where he left his team early. He could have played the 20 season, and he chose not to. And yes, I know there was the pandemic issues, but every other player on the team decided to play. He chose not to. He chose to protect his investment in the NFL, where he was going to be a first-round pick no matter what. Now, if you're a Penn State fan and you want to sing his praises, go right to it. I don't mind. I do the same thing. Tremendous player. But you know what? I wish he had played that year at Penn State. And if you're going to tell the full story of Micah Parsons, I think that needs to be included in the story.
It is indeed part of the whole narrative. And I think there's a certain excitement level whenever a Penn State guy is doing not just really good things in the NFL, because there are a number of guys. You know, Chris Godwin is doing really good things in the NFL. Mike Gesicki's still doing really good things in the NFL. There's a bunch of guys out there doing it. But Micah Parsons is doing transcendent things in the NFL. He's doing things that, you know, he's in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation in year one. He is being compared, not even subtly, to Lawrence Taylor. He is doing all these things that are such positive things. Everybody wants to claim him as their own. That, yes, you do kind of look beyond that 2020 opt-out. I don't, you know, a guy who is a first round pick in that situation with uncertainty, how much of it was pandemic and how much of it was just kind of an easy way to focus on training and combine and strength and all that stuff. Yeah, I don't really know where the lines are there, but I don't blame a guy for protecting his investment. But to your point, it is part of it, you know, and Ja'Marr Chase was another one who opted out in that situation. It is just another sort of, you know, uncomfortable reality of where we are, is that there aren't really any rules sometimes. This is all brand new, and what players are or aren't doing. Like, it was, 5-6 years ago where it was brand new to opt out of bowl games, and now it's pretty commonplace with those. How common is it going to be for guys to opt out of entire seasons because they know what is ahead of them? They know what their draft stock is. We'll see about that. But Parsons was one of those early ones, and you kind of can't help but think, you know, if he's doing this for Penn State in 2020, how different would things have been? You know, I'm more wonder about that than hold it against a guy, but how different would things have been if he's on this defense? I'm guessing they don't lose that game in Indiana. I'm guessing there's a bunch of stuff that he does that causes havoc on opposing offenses, that you don't lose momentum as suddenly as they did in the season. You know, it's a bunch of what ifs, but he would have been a big difference maker in that 2020 season. They were scrambling at linebacker all year. They had guys out of position as a result of it. So it did have a very real effect on Penn State in 2020.
To understand, make sure I explain my stance, Dustin. It's his life. It's his call. Can't blame a kid for doing what he thinks is in his best interest. James Franklin and the rest of the coaching staff and Penn State as a whole has to say things like take pride in how he's performing, because some of that has an effect on the incoming recruits. However, journalists, fans, if you're going to tell the whole story, though, tell the whole story. And sitting out that year, and is that a precursor of more of that to come? I suspect that it is. Dustin, let's move on. With all of this talk of sitting out, transfer portal, it really does shake up the scholarship picture for coaches, and it really puts them in a quandary. Do you use up all those scholarships on incoming, you know, high school players? Do you hold some back for the transfer portal? How much do we anticipate players leaving? And again, something I talked about earlier, where guys aren't going to transfer in December. They're going to wait till January for the semester to begin. So how much does this all play havoc with your management of your roster?
I think this was a hard thing to do before the transfer portal was a thing. In that, you know, you didn't know which guys, you know, would give up football. You didn't know which guys would grow out of positions. You didn't know where there would be injuries and where you'd be, you know, where it looks like you're deep now, you suddenly become shallow later. This is Andy Frank's job a lot of the times, is to kind of manage that personnel situation. And now you've just got a billion more variables. Incoming, outgoing transfers, having to have those conversations. You've got the COVID season still in play and having to get back to scholarship normalcy out of that. You know, this is not an easy thing to do. And I suspect from one day to the next, the picture probably changes pretty dramatically. James Franklin has to have these exit conversations with players and has to put a little bit of extra into guys who might have eligibility left, but it might be in both of their best interests to not return for another year. So I suspect he probably knows at this point who is and isn't coming back, because he has to before he can start really evaluating the transfer portal and stuff. But this is a really complicated thing to manage, and it's probably one of the reasons that you hear coaches complain. And I would say this, just because a guy makes $8 million a year doesn't mean his complaints about certain things are invalid. It does make life more difficult. It does kind of shorten the offseason, which is already short for coaches.
It does, and it makes these decisions doubly difficult. They already were tough. But again, I'll be like that cynical fan. That's why he's being paid $8 million a year, Dusty. All right, that's it for quarter number one in the news. Stick around, we're going to take a look at how the running back room looks going forward.
This is where the temperatures are unkind. This is where water freezes in the blink of an eye. This is where the wind bites harder than a mid-ice cross check. This is where the beer is always on ice. This is Labatt Hockey, played the way Mother Nature intended. Labatt Blue is proud to support pond hockey and all the hardy souls that like to play it cool. This is Labatt Hockey.
Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.